Shall we all sit down for a few minutes? And if you wish, you can keep your eyes open. We'll have our discussion. Third day is over. That means 3 days we are heading towards freedom. Today I see more smiles than yesterday, which means the operation is being successful. But you have to retain the smile. Otherwise the smile goes away. Keep up with the smile as the day progresses, and as you keep on smiling, then the freedom becomes earlier than expected. What happens as the day progresses, each day is slightly better than the other. You will see that today was better than yesterday. And likewise, day after day, it becomes better, better, easier and easier. Why? Because the first day or the second day, there is always revolt from the mind, resistance from the mind. But as the day progresses, of course, the mind starts calming down, the mind starts quietening, and then of course, things start to change. In the first 2 days, all the enemy starts jumping on you, but today, and as the day progresses, the enemy starts going away slowly, because they start to understand, oh, we are not wanted anymore. So they are wise also, they start going away. And all the friends, usually they have to be invited, but now these friends will start coming to you without invitation, which is a good sign. Practicing, keep on practicing. The Buddha says, in one of his first teachings, Buddha says, Mano puppang gama dhammang, mano setta mano maya. That means what? Mano puppang gama dhammang. Manosetta, that means mind precedes all mental states. That means everything starts in the mind. Mind precedes everything. Our human actions can be divided into three. Everything starts at the mental level. Now you know how things start at the mental level. These 2-3 days you've been seeing how everything starts in the mind. Let's say one anger came in the mind. You become very angry in the mind, you start thinking this, thinking, boiling, 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 the anger is boiling, and then you cannot control. Of course, during this retreat, you can't shout because noble silence. So you're boiling inside. But if this is in a usual day, if this boiling starts in the mind, then what happens? You cannot control. You end up shouting. That means this very mental action which mind precedes becomes verbal action. You start shouting, you are like this, you are like this. And then you cannot control. You are boiling at the verbal level. You are shouting, you cannot control. You end up punching somebody's nose. This is how the action gradually processes. Like from the mental action comes to the verbal action, comes to the physical action. And now what happens? During the retreats, what? You can't express it at the verbal level. You can't express it at the, of course, physical level. But keep on watching. This reaction will start. Suddenly let's say you're sitting. You're trying your best, of course. Breath is there, feeling is there, breath is there, feeling is there. You kept on trying, 1 minute passed, 2 minute passed, and then you cannot concentrate. The mind keeps jumping here, jumping there, and you say, oh damn, just stand up and walk out. Or else you just give up and just sit down and just start thinking. This is called reacting, giving up. Another reaction starts when you're walking outside very slowly. You try it for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes. After a time, you feel so bad, you just walk very fast and go away. This is how, because you can't shout. If you had this opportunity to shout, I'm sure there will be a lot of shouting. Using this, what is this, what this, all kinds of things will start. But because you're forbidden to talk, so you can't express it. But many a times, we can see at the physical level, some reaction is taking place. Strong reaction is coming. Always remember, mind precedes all mental states. Everything starts in the mind. And that is why the Buddha gives so much of importance to the mind. Because once you start curing the mind, once you start training the mind, once you start controlling the mind, then obviously your verbal action and your physical action will be as par with the mind. Because the mind is not trained, your verbal action is not trained, your physical action is not trained. Why there is so much violence today? Wherever you see there is so much of violence. Because nobody gives importance to the mind. Everybody knows how to ride. I've heard even in the United Nations chartered, whatever it is, it's written, war begins in human mind and it must end in human mind. It is written there, big bold letters, but what's the use? Nobody understands. They've taken this from some of the Eastern philosophy, mind, everything starts in human mind, must end in human mind, big letters. It is there, but what's the use? Nobody understands this. Now in these few days of retreat, you will start to understand how everything starts in the mind and how everything must stop in the mind. And you have done some exercise during these last 2-3 days. Some anger was there, frustration was there, you start observing and you come, overcame. Not that you were shouting, not that you were fighting, not that you were punching somebody's nose during these 3 days. You were not doing that. Of course, if you were given the freedom, then something would have happened. But there was no freedom. This is how the mind starts working. Somebody comes to the Buddha and says, Buddha, I mean, you are called Samma Sambuddha. Samma Sambuddha means fully enlightened. Fully enlightened means one who is fully liberated, who is so powerful, who has all these psychic abilities. So somebody goes and tells the Buddha, look Buddha, you have so much of psychic abilities, so much of powers, why don't you use your powers? Why do you make us work day, night, meditate, these, that? Why don't you just use your power and free us all of all these problems? But the Buddha says, you yourself must work. We have to work. Nobody else can work for you. No God, no power, external or internal power, cannot free you. You yourself must work. This is what the Buddha says. And you will also see, somebody says something to you, you have a problem, somebody says something to you. It seems it's working. Only it seems. But deep inside, it doesn't make any difference. Supposing if you have some problem and you are visiting some psychology or psychiatrist, or if this was to work and then you go, you should be all right, free of all these problems. But then you keep on going, keep on visiting. Why this? Then that means something is wrong. It seems to work, but it doesn't work. You have to work for yourself at a very deeper level. Then only you can come out of any problems. No problem is a problem, mind you. The moment you say problem, it's a problem, it becomes problem. You keep on saying, no, this is not a problem. Likewise, during this meditation also, you keep on saying, no, 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 it's not difficult. It will be much easier, because our mind is conditioned to say, oh, difficult, it is so difficult, I cannot do this, I know it, but I can't do this. Then your mind is conditioned. How can you do it? So keep on practicing. Another example. Initially when you're meditating, if you hear some sound, it seems it's disturbing, very disturbing. It seems. For beginners, you're beginning, so it seems things are disturbing. But look, things are not disturbing. One student goes to the teacher and says, You know, he's making so much noise here. It's so disturbing. And I'm sure some of you will tell the same. This person is so disturbing. That sound is so disturbing. This is so disturbing. That is so disturbing. And do you know what the teacher said? Oh, really? The sound is disturbing. He said, why do you disturb the sound? Why do you disturb the sound? You don't disturb the sound. Sound is not disturbing. One saintly person, he sits down to meditate, like any one of us here, very quiet, and he prepares his meditation place. Very quiet, soundproof, everything is so silent, so quiet. And then he starts, just sits down to meditate, and suddenly, from his window, he hears all this, what do you call this, wild frogs croaking. Very loud sound coming from the window. And as soon as he sat down, all these frogs started shouting. I don't know how this frog sounds, because we don't have frogs in Ladakh. But anyway, I can imagine it's not a very pleasant sound. And now he's a saintly person. He looks out the window and says, shut up, all the frogs. And of course, when a saintly person shouts, they listen. All the frogs in the vicinity, not only those frogs around, but all the frogs in the vicinity kept complete silence. Oh, saintly person says, shut up, so we must shut up. And now he sat down to meditate. He put his posture right and he was like, now it's so congenial, so perfect condition for meditation. Now I can meditate. But do you know what happens? Deep inside, one voice comes. It says, why did God create this croaking of the sound? The frogs croaking. Why did God create it? And he was so disturbed. Hey, what is this sound? Hey, keep this sound away. I'm here to meditate. And then suddenly he sits again. Again the voice says, God must be as pleased with the croaking of the sound as much with your meditation. Again he was so disturbed. Hey, what is this sound coming? Again he tried to sit down for meditation. Never. The sound kept coming. The inner voice kept saying, God must be as pleased with the croaking of the sound as much as with your meditation. And then he couldn't sit in meditation. So what he did? He stood up again, went to the window and said, shout! And of course, all the frogs in the vicinity were so happy, they started croaking loudly. And now he sits down to meditate. For the first time in his life, he understood the meaning of meditation. Understand? Many of you have done so many courses, meditation retreats of this, that. And if you are at this stage, understand what was happening to this saintly person. He was a saintly person, not like us. Even a saintly person thinks it is so disturbing. But as soon as he said, shout, and he could meditate much better because he stopped resisting the sound that's coming from outside. Otherwise, we have so much of resistance. Why this? This is not right. This is not right. This sound shouldn't be there. Air condition is not working. I would say if air condition is not working, congratulations. You've got so much to work. So hot. So you have to work with the hot. The easier the conditions, the mind becomes very easy. One thing is okay, then the other thing is not okay. So the mind is like very spoiled. We are very spoiled mind. Always try to learn to live in very difficult conditions. And then only, meditation teacher says, if you have physical pain, discomfort, of course, which most of you are experiencing during these 2-3 days, this pain here, pain in the back, pain in the shoulder, pain in the head, pain in the nose, pain in everywhere, neck and everywhere. There's no part of the body where there's no pain. Do you know what the teacher says? Very good if you have got pain. If you have pain, then you have something to work on the pain. Otherwise, if there's no pain, what will you work on? So, all these things stop resisting. For the next coming days, you will not resist any sounds that comes. Just let go. Of course, from tomorrow you will start working. You started today with feeling all the feelings here, somewhere below the nostrils and around the upper lips. And from tomorrow you will start whole bodies, feelings, thoughts, emotions, whatever comes. You will just start observing. Just understand this word, observe. Observe without resisting, without fighting, just welcome. Open yourself to all this and nothing becomes a disturbance. But if you start resisting all the time, it doesn't work. We are here not to resist. No matter what difficulties you have, if there's some problem, always smile. After all, what? You're not here to fight. You are not here to fight with the mind. I keep on saying, don't fight, don't pressure yourself too much. People come and say, oh no, within these 2 days I must, even now, I can't concentrate on the breath. Oh, everybody must be at least on the breath for like 10 minutes, 15 minutes, at least 10 minutes so everybody must be doing. I'm here, not even able to observe one breath. So you start becoming more agitated, more restless, thinking that I should be able. So you keep on thinking like this, more restlessness, more, and you start putting pressure. And then when the more pressure you put, the more tension develops, the more restlessness comes, and then you cannot meditate. Meditation always has to be done with complete relax. Relax. Loosen yourself. Don't put pressure on yourself. You are here to understand the reality as it is. And sometimes we try to create the reality by putting pressure, by putting this, tensions, more tension. We are here to get off the tensions and you are building up more tensions and tensions. And that's why you'll have headache, you have this headache, that headache, this pain, that pain, this discomfort, that discomfort. Hundreds of discomfort starts because we are creating it. That's why you are here, make best use of these few days by relaxing, all the time relax. If it is too much, sometimes we end up fighting so much with ourselves, then if fighting becomes a meditation, then of course, stand up, relax a bit, take a walk slowly, and then come and sit down. But don't keep on fighting. If you end up fighting, then it starts fighting back. And then the reverse starts. You're here to calm down the mind becomes more agitated, more restless. Understand this? After all, why all of you came to this meditation? The Buddha was also doing meditation like this. 2,550 years, Buddha was also doing the same, sitting under this Bodhi tree, meditating. What was he discovering? And Buddha was, he discovered what he called the Four Noble Truths. What is this Four Noble Truths? Buddha says, human life or all existence is subject to suffering, dukkha. And because the truth about dukkha is there, we're here. And Buddha did not stop saying that, there is so much of suffering in the world, so you bear with this suffering, you have no other choice. Oh no, Buddha did not stop there. Many teachers stopped at this level, saying that there is suffering and there was no solution. Just that they discovered there is suffering, Buddha went one step further. He says, every suffering has a cause. He didn't stop at the cause level. Many teachers in India stopped at this level. Oh yes, so there is suffering, of course. There is a cause of suffering, of course. That's it. Buddha did not stop here. He said, all sufferings can be ended. No matter what suffering it is, all sufferings can be ended. Again, many teachers stopped at this level, saying, suffering can be ended, that's it. How to end suffering was never told. And that is why Buddha had to keep on running from this teacher, that teacher, because nobody taught how to end suffering. And that is why the Buddha says, all sufferings can be ended, and there is this path to end all suffering. You're trying to walk on this path. What is this suffering? Usually when I ask people, what is suffering? people start saying, oh, this frustration is suffering for me, this pain is suffering for me, emotional suffering for me, physical is suffering for me, all kinds of lists starts coming up. But the Buddha starts saying, jati pi dukkha, that means birth is suffering. How is birth suffering? I don't know. But I've seen my wife, so I know, I can imagine what suffering, birth is suffering. Look, analyze your life. By understanding what suffering is, you accept the reality of life. Then only you can work. If you don't accept the reality of life, then you cannot work on it. So understand, Buddha says, jati pi dukkha. What is jati? Birth is suffering. When my wife conceived her baby for the first time, the first 2 months, okay, the first incident was, she kept on saying, Vivek, there is such a bad smell in the kitchen. And then we thought that some rat must be dead in the kitchen or whatever it is. We took out all the vessels, everything, kept cleaning everything, washed everything. And still she says, Vivek, there's still this very bad smell. So we kept on looking, every corner of the kitchen, nothing. Started cooking, she said, so bad smell. Hey, what is this bad smell all the time? Then my sister came over and she says, I told her, what this aunt, my wife keeps saying, there is a bad smell in the kitchen, there is bad smell, there is, I don't know, we cleaned everything, there was nothing, but still there is bad smell. And then, of course, my sister knew. She says, yeah, I know. She's pregnant. That's a sign of pregnancy, bad smell. And then, of course, I didn't know whether to laugh or smile or cry. I don't know. Since it started with a bad smell. All right, then the next days, she started throwing up, vomiting all the time, couldn't eat anything. I thought, hey, what's happening? I thought, never again will she be pregnant. This is the last time. Throwing up all the time, vomiting. Went on 1 month vomiting, second month also vomiting, third month vomiting. I used to go to office only to come back to see her throwing up in one corner. Hey Anne, how are you doing? Yeah, you know, I don't know, I'm throwing up. Nothing is coming out, only this something, I don't know what. Just keep throwing up. This is how pregnancy starts. All right. After that, things seems to become normal for another 1 or 2 months. All right. And then, suddenly after like 5 or 6 months or something, she starts, oh, there's a pain here. Hey, what happened? Baby kicks. The baby starts kicking here, kicking there, and it's so painful. All right, then after like 7, 8 months, then you start. Let's say the day has come for the birth. My goodness, one slight move from this bed to the other, she shouts, oh, so much pain, so much pain. Birth is suffering. Buddha was right. Now this is from the mother's side. All right, then when the baby comes out, of course nowadays medical science has invented all kinds of medicine where you put this injection, that injection, you don't feel the baby is coming out. So you don't feel that pain. Anyway, she had to be operated, so she had this operation. Again, this operation is done with some medicine. You don't feel this, the womb being cut or whatever it is. And then, now as soon as the baby comes out, birth is suffering, Buddha says, the baby starts crying. And if the baby does not cry when it's coming out, the doctor takes up the baby and hits on the back to make sure that the baby cries. That means what? Suffering must start. That is the indication. Suffering has to start now. You're born, you suffer now. Supposing if you are born laughing, I don't know, the doctor might take a stick and hit you as much as you need to cry. Buddha says, jati pi dukkha. That is the meaning. Birth is suffering. So suffering starts from birth. But do we understand this? If you understand this, then you smile. Then the Buddha says, Jarapi Dukkha. All right, now you're born. You start to grow, you start to grow, you start becoming big. Teenage. I met one young lady who came to a retreat. And she had a boyfriend. So I asked, so tell me, why you both decided to be together? And the boy starts telling me all these philosophical answers. He says, well, look, Vivek, I'm only with her to find her God. Oh, okay, to find her God. And he says, as soon as she finds her God, I will leave. What a good excuse to be together for the rest of their life. Anyway, then I asked the girl, hey, by the way, what is this God? What are you searching for? She says, when I was teenage, God used to come and talk to me. I was so happy. And suddenly when I reached the later teenage, I was so miserable, all these emotions coming, and God disappeared and left me alone. I am suffering so much, so much. And God went away. That's why we are together. As we grow, suffering follows us. Like, look, when you come to the teenage, of course, many of us say, oh, teenage was a wonderful time. But teenage comes with so much of emotion, so much of disturbance, emotional disturbance, this disturbance, relationship problem, that problem, that problem. Hundreds of problems are there. And then you start growing up. Buddha says, Jarapi Dukkha, and you start growing, growing, growing. Suddenly one day you see some grey hair here. Tension starts building up. I'm getting old. That is why Buddha says, Jarapi Dukkha. The problem is, none of us wants to become old. The fact is, don't tell me, oh no, no, Vivek, I accept, you know, I want to be old. Don't tell me that. The underlying truth is that we don't want to grow old. Because old age comes with so much of physical disturbances, suffering, a lot of things comes as a package with old age. And that is why Buddha says, Jarapi Dukkha. Do we accept this? If you accept this, then you can accept old age with a big smile. Otherwise, I tell you, the moment you see grey hair, the moment you start your teeth falling, nothing is pleasant. Give you one example. When I was in middle school, I had a teacher who had a very beautiful moustache. As soon as I looked at his moustache, I felt so happy. I was in fourth or fifth grade. I thought to myself, I want this moustache. He looks so handsome. I want also this moustache. And of course, as a little boy, where can you have moustache? But I was admiring his moustache so much. And then I asked a few of my friends, my so-called intelligent friends, my classmates, hey, look, what to do to have this moustache? I want to have like him. And one student, pretending to be very intelligent, he says, Vivek, very easy, my father takes a blade and shaves every morning, you do the same, you will have moustache. I said, thank you. Next day, I go with this blade to the classroom and I start shaving like this in the classroom. And I did that for a week or so. After like few months, I was in a place where I was to be baptized. I was, of course, I have a little background about Christianity, so I was to be baptized. So I went to this place to get baptized. And before baptism, of course, I was dressing up, you know, making my this thing, and suddenly I looked into the mirror, I really saw a few hairs already here. I felt so sad at that time that, oh no, now I'm old. Like this fear came to me, and I was so sad on the day of my baptism, of course. First, I wanted to have this moustache, and when the moustache starts growing, I felt so sad. I took a scissor and cut it without letting others see to hide my face. This is how it is. The truth is that we don't want to be old, but old age comes. Buddha says, Jarapi Dukkha. And of course, with Jara, then what comes? All this sorrow, sadness, these, that, and then associating with unpleasant is also suffering. Of course, how is this? We have to associate with people whom we don't want, but we have no other choice. Let's say you're going to office. Everywhere, normally in life, if you look at very carefully, there is somewhere or the other a black sheep. Supposing you are going to your office, you are so happy, smiling, and suddenly you see your boss, and you say, damn, I don't want to see his face. But he is holding a very important post. You can't say, hey, get out, I don't want to associate with you. You have to be with him, no choice. This Buddha says, associating with the unpleasant is suffering. You have to associate. Sometimes the unpleasant can be your parents. When you are young, you want to do a lot of things, and the parent says, oh no, you can't do this, you can't do this. And you start hating the parents. You can't run away from the parents because you are depending on your parents. But at the same time, you don't want to be with them. This also happens, associating. Another thing is relationship. Of course, initially when you so-called fall in love or fall in lust, whatever it is, you start saying, I love you for the few months or few days or few months, years, and suddenly sometimes this very person becomes the most unwanted person. This associating with the unpleasant, Buddha says, is suffering. Understand this. Don't blame anybody for this. It is a clear truth that associating with the unpleasant is suffering. In your job place, in your university, you don't like your professor, but yet you have to sit with him, you have to smile with him, artificial smile of course, but yet you have to be with him, this Buddha says, is suffering. And not to get what you desire all the time is suffering. That is what the Buddha says. Desiring all the time, but not all desires are fulfilled. That is what suffering is. What is desiring? There is so much of desires. Let's say you have a washing machine at home. Of course, we don't have a washing machine, but you have a washing machine. And suddenly on television there is an advertisement of another washing machine. And now you have a washing machine where you open, put some detergent or whatever it is, press the button, it starts working. And not only that, dries your clothes or whatever it is. Now on television there is another washing machine, and they are advertising like this. Now this washing machine, you don't have to press the button. You just go near it, opens. And then you put your clothes. Not only that, this not only washes and dries it, but it also irons. And then you start saying, oh yes. And the mind is very clever. You start saying, yes, I need this. You know, nowadays I'm busy, I can't iron my clothes, no time. I need this. You know, that washing machine, I have to press the button, and then I have to take here, take there. Why all this trouble? Desire. But as soon as you see below, I don't know how many dollars is expensive here, but let's say $500 or $600, you can't afford to buy. Then suffering starts. You start wanting, but not being fulfilled. Buddha says human desire is like a bottomless bucket. However much you feel, never fills. This is how it starts. And that is why not fulfilling what you wish, Buddha says, is suffering. Constantly. And likewise, Buddha kept on saying, this is suffering, this is suffering. And then at the end he says, this fathom-long body from head to feet is suffering. The suffering is just within this body from head to feet. And if you understand that suffering is within this body, fathom-long body, you have nobody to blame for your suffering. So this is how the Buddhas explain what suffering is. If you understand what suffering is, then accept the reality that there is suffering is there. So long we are born in the world, we come with suffering. Accept the reality. And because we don't know how to deal with this suffering, we don't know what is the cause of this suffering, that's why we keep on running here, keep on running there, praying to this, praying to that, help me, this me, give me this mantra, that mantra, or giving this all kinds of things we are seeking, forgetting. Buddha says, you have to work on your own and free yourself of all these sufferings. And Buddha says, what is the cause? Cause of suffering, Buddha says, is craving all the time. Craving, always desiring all the time, desiring, endless desiring. One desire is always desiring for material things. All the time wanting to have material things. And today's world, why there's so much of tension, why there's so much of stress in today's society? Like if you compare Israel and Ladakh, for example. Ladakh's consumerism is so small. So you don't hear much of tension or depression. These are new words for us. We don't know what this word depression or this or that means. But you hear from these so-called developed countries, depressions, this depression, that depression, so many things. Why? Because the 21st century is becoming a society of consumerism, where so much of desiring things are created materially. What kind of material? You go to a big shopping mall, there is hardly anything you will say, oh, I don't need this. Hardly anything. You go to this shopping mall, let's say a big shopping mall, and then you see one spoon, for example. You have so many spoons at home, but this spoon is the same spoon, except that there is a plastic covering on it, and there is a little grip on it. And then, of course, you touch the spoon and say, ah, this is wonderful grip. My spoon back home doesn't have a grip, and this grip helps. I can hold much better. All this convincing consumer society has created immense greed, immense desire, wanting all the time. One thing is not enough, You have, initially you start with sleeping on the floor, then you have a bed. The first thing we need is a place to lie down. Basic thing, the simple basic idea is to rest. For that you need a basic mattress, of course. But then that mattress change into desires all the time, wanting to have better. What is better? Then the sofa starts like this thick Dunlop kind of a thing, where you feel so comfortable. That is not enough. In Switzerland, I saw one mattress, I couldn't stop jumping on it. There was water inside. A water mattress. When I gave this example to some of the meditators who came to Dhamma House, somebody told me, Vivek, as from today onwards, if I get any depression, if I'm very sad, I will just remember Vivek in Switzerland jumping on this waterbed and all my tension will go away. Endless desires. And you know, the person who was sleeping on this bed, my goodness, full of tension, full of stress, no help. Probably a meditator gets this bed means something. I mean, you could enjoy it with this awareness. If you're not a meditator, it makes no sense. First you think that this bed will help me. Ah, I will get good sleep, this sleep, that sleep. You keep on thinking and you buy this as soon as you lie down. After all, human mind is human mind. Unless you don't develop this mind, no matter however much you develop the material aspect of your life, nothing is going to work. Keep this in mind. And this is how human life goes on, like, you know, desiring, endless desire. And where does this craving arise? Understand, where is this craving arise? Where is the field where craving grows? Craving grows wherever there is all these pleasing things to the senses. We have six senses. Of course, in East we have six senses, in the West we have five senses. What is the sixth sense? In the East we say mind is the sixth sense. Not the sixth sense that you see in these movies. The sixth sense, horrible, don't watch it. You can't meditate. It's pleasing things to the senses wherever there is more the more there is chance for all this craving to arise. And the craving, the tree of craving starts growing. Bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger. And then more tension starts developing, more. And then the competition in society. Society is full of madness. Do you know why? Analyze our life. If we look at our human life, it is full of madness. And that is why the society is full of madness. And that is why, because of this madness in society, all this pressure, and people can't come to us. You know, we have so much of pressure. Why not will you have pressure when the whole system is wrong? Understand how the system is wrong. Let us analyze our human life. The first year you are born, you are a baby. The first 10, 15 years you spend in school, so-called school. How many children like schools? You know that. Poor children. I think the education system here must be a slightly better in terms of, again, the material aspect. In Asia, poor children in the morning have to go with 5-6 kilos of books on their back. So heavy. And these children hate like anything. I've hated school, so I know. Anyway, our life is like this, plain and simple. You grow like this, few years you spend in school, studying. And what? You are studying, but you are thinking, when will I finish this damn schooling? And you study half-hearted, you don't want this subject, but you have to study, no other choice. This is how you start growing up. But the thinking is, yes, when will I finish this? Alright. Then you start telling yourself, when I finish this schooling, when I reach high school, I'll be very happy. Suddenly you are in high school. For the first few days you feel so happy, I'm in high school now. But suddenly you start realizing, high school, when will I reach college? I'll be very happy when I graduate. When I get my BA degree, I'll be very happy. BA degree, remove all the letters after D. What remains? Bad. This is modern education. And then you're very proud. Next year I'm going to do my master's degree. MA degree, remove all the letters after D. Madness. Because this education is all about madness, it does not touch the deep part of human mind. It is only at the very surface level of human mind. That is why it is never satisfying. My teacher used to say that this modern education is tummy-based education. Tummy. Just to feel the stomach-based education. That's all. Nothing is given to train the mind. That is the problem. That is why the society is full of madness. If you understand this, if you don't understand this, then another madness comes. Now you finish your studies, you should get a good job. Look at him, he's got such a good job. Look, you haven't got a job yet. Another pressure comes. And then look, he's got a beautiful house. You haven't had a house yet. Look, he's got a BMW. You should get at least some Mercedes Benz. All this pressure in the society of this, of that, all kinds. And let's say one of you suddenly develops this mind to meditate and develop the mind, and you're not so interested in all these kind of things. Now you started realizing, hey, this is another different kind of education. Look, it is helping me in my life. Look, I'm becoming more peaceful. I'm becoming this. And do you know what the society tells you? This fellow has gone half mad, crazy. This is how the impression is given. In this madness society, in this pressure, what else? If you are put on with all this pressure of the society, with all this expectation of the society of what you should be, what you should study, what you should achieve, and all this pressure after pressure, your head becomes so big like this. And then the head is going spinning around all the time. You don't know, totally confused, what to do, which is right, what is not right, all confused. That is why the problem starts. Understand, these are, Buddha says, suffering. This suffering comes because we keep on craving. Now, if your whole life's intention or the purpose of human life is just to acquire this badness and madness certificate, and then you get some job. Most of the time, many of you do jobs which you never like. But anyway, if this is just the purpose of human life, how unfortunate. But if you want to see something beyond just this life, then of course you have to start developing the mind, purifying the mind. Science says that what we have achieved so far in the scientific field is not even 1% of human mind. It's not even 1% of human mind. Then imagine how much power we have in the human mind. During those days, during the Buddha's time, this wonderful technique was there to develop the mind to such a high level, to such a high concentration. We have lost it today. But of course, there are certain part of it still there. Opportunities are there to go deeper, to understand, to explore. Oh, this is the suffering. Accept the reality it is, and then start working on it. Understanding, craving is there. Now you start working not to crave. That's how you can start. Now in these 2 days, what you were practicing, the Buddha gave a very clear path. It is called the Noble Eightfold Path. Buddha explains, suffering is there, cause of suffering is there, suffering can be ended. And then he says, of course, to end all suffering, there is this middle path. He called it Aryo Arthang Yugo Maggo. That means the Eightfold Noble Path. Whoever walks on this path becomes a noble person. And this Eightfold Noble Path is divided into Shila, Samadhi and Panya. Shila means morality, what you've been practicing for the last 2-3 days, and of course this you'll have to keep on practicing until the end of your retreat. Shila, morality. You don't generate any mind of destroying any living beings whatsoever. But on the other hand, develop this mind of saving life, giving life, promoting life. Then you are practicing Shila. Then another one is, you don't take anything that does not belong to you. On the other hand, you develop this mind of sharing. Keep on developing this mind of sharing. And the other one is, all these kind of sensual thoughts in the mind, start developing this mind. Purify this mind, put full energy or divert all the energies of the mind towards developing the mind, the concentration of the mind. This, then you're practicing Shila. Then not to speak anything which is lie, which is not the truth. Develop this mind to speak the truth all the time. And then not to depend on any intoxicating things that disturbs the mind, that confuses the mind, that does not help the mind in any way. This is called Shila. Buddha called it Shila. And not only that, in this Shila, Buddha also says, right livelihood is part of Shila. What is right livelihood? Any profession that you do, any job that you do, if it is harming or hurting any living beings whatsoever, Buddha says, don't do this. Supposing if you are doing business in like arms and ammunition, selling guns and bombs, when you do this, you are creating immense harm in others. So Buddha says, don't deal with this trading in arms and ammunition. If you have any kind of business like this, Buddha says, don't do it. And then trading in living beings. Let's say you grow some cattle and sheep and cows, and then at the some, and when they become big and strong enough, you sell it to the butcher and say, now you can kill. Buddha says, no, don't do this. This is not Shila. And the other one is not doing business or not selling your flesh or in getting yourself in prostitutions. It's not the right livelihood. It is a livelihood, of course, but not right livelihood. So these, and Buddha says, don't do trade in poisons. Because again, this poison somebody will take to kill somebody or to harm oneself or to harm others. So this Buddha says, right livelihood. If any one of you is engaged in any one of this profession, you might as well think twice, because this involves so much of hate or harm to others. And not only that, Buddha also further explains, saying that avoid the profession of soldiers, joining the army, becoming butchers, becoming fishermen. When I say soldiers, somebody told me, in Israel, when you are there, don't talk about soldiers. Don't tell them, don't join soldiers. When these professions, wherever there is, involves so much of hate and harm to others, Buddha says, don't do this. Then only your Shila is strong. Morality is strong. Only when your morality is strong, then only you can practice samadhi. That means concentration, concentration. Now, if any one of you is engaged in any one of this profession, there is so much of things going on in the mind, you cannot concentrate. So for these few days, just keep aside all this and try to purify the mind with all these few things that I told you, Shila, morality, and then you can start practicing morality. And then you start developing the mind slowly and slowly. You have started it. Some of you have even started becoming, oh yeah, today I can focus more on the mind, becoming better. And likewise, it will keep on coming better. Keep on developing. Don't stop. I told you yesterday, four kinds of efforts. Don't forget about these efforts. Keep on effort. Otherwise, what happens? This effort can any time just go away. As long as this is there, you maintain it. Maintenance is very important. Otherwise, it can slip any time. So you keep on reminding yourself, oh yes, effort has to be there. Continued effort has to be there. One last story before we go. There was a monk in India, a very saintly person, and people used to go to him, and they, whenever they see him, they say, oh, they used to feel so peaceful, and they say, oh, you are such a saintly person, a great person. And then suddenly he thought, he analyzed himself. Am I really a saintly person? Everybody says I'm a saintly person. And he started analyzing, of course, meditating. And suddenly he realized, oh no. No. There is still hate in my mind. There is still greed in my mind. Desire is there. I'm not a saintly person. No. I'm not a saintly person. He realized. But everybody thought he's an enlightened, saintly person. And then he asked somebody, is there any saintly person in India somewhere? Any enlightened master anywhere in India? Then somebody told him, oh yes, there is a person called Buddha. And he said, oh yeah, then I must go to him, because I'm not enlightened. I need to see this enlightened person. So he goes to this Buddha. And as soon as he goes to the monastery where the Buddha was, suddenly he found Buddha was not there. So he asked the monks, where is the Buddha? They said, oh, Buddha is begging for alms. That means the Buddhist monks, they take this bowl, and the Buddhist monks are not supposed to cook. They are supposed to beg for food. That means they go on, even in traditional Buddhist countries, even today, the monks, they go to the streets, go to house with this bowl, just stand there for 5 minutes, 2 minutes or something. If something comes. If not, they keep on moving from house to house. Whatever comes in the bowl, they eat it. This is how the tradition of the Buddhist monks are. So Buddha was doing the same. He was also begging. And suddenly he went in search of the Buddha. People said, you can't wait, Buddha will come back. He said, no, I cannot wait. I have to see him now. And then suddenly as he went in the streets, he saw Buddha was begging for food. And he went running to the Buddha. He says, look, Buddha, I need to talk to you. Buddha said, well, look, now I am on an arms down and I cannot teach you standing here. You wait for half an hour. He says, oh no, I cannot wait. You have to teach me now. And Buddha started analyzing, hey, what's this? And then he said to the Buddha, look, who has seen the half an hour? And what is the guarantee that I will live this half an hour? Anything can happen in half an hour. Maybe I will die, maybe you will die. So please, give me the teachings now. This is what he insisted on the Buddha. And suddenly Buddha saw through his mind that this fellow was going to die in the next few hours. He was going to die. And then suddenly Buddha, standing there, he started teaching them. And as soon as the Buddha started teaching to him, he became enlightened. He said to the Buddha that, now I have this good intention to learn, but who knows, maybe in half an hour I will lose my intention. And I have all this motivation, I have all this strength in me, who knows, in half an hour I might lose this. So please give me now. Likewise, if you have the good intentions, if you have developed this faith in yourself, confidence in yourself, keep on practicing. Don't delay, don't postpone it. Do it. Keep on doing it, keep on doing it. Don't postpone. If you postpone, you might lose it. Don't lose it. Keep on practicing, keep on developing, keep on adding your strong intentions, keep on adding your motivations, your efforts. Keep on practicing. Don't give up, don't postpone. You never know what might happen the next hour. As long as this time is there, make best use of this time. Shall we all sit down? Visualize yourself smiling and very happy. Feel yourself very fortunate that you have completed 3 days successfully. You're trying your best, feel yourself happy about it. See yourself smiling and happy. Visualize yourself smiling. Happily practicing, happily trying your best, see yourself. And then make your wishes, may I always remain happy. May I be free from all difficulties, of all problems, whether physical or mental. I keep on developing, keep on developing, keep on working diligently. And may I enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness, real peace, real happiness. Now visualize your teachers for this 2 days, for this retreat. Again see your teacher smiling. Very happily sharing their little experiences, trying to guide you, try to help you. See them smiling. Again make a wishes, may my teacher always remain happy. May he keep on sharing for the good of others, for the good of many. And may he be free from all difficulty. Visualize all the people sitting in this hall together in the Dharma, trying to meditate together, trying to practice together, trying to develop together. just visualize all the people sitting in the hall, happily practicing, happily trying to practice, happily developing the mind. All of you enjoy real peace. May all of you be free from all difficulties, of all confusions, problems, and may all of you keep on developing, and enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness, real peace, real happiness. All the workers, volunteers who are managing the course in different faculties, see them smilingly, happily serving, making sure that everything is arranged properly to make our retreat comfortable. See them smiling very happily, giving their services. Make a deep wishes. May all the Dhamma workers always remain happy. May they be free from all difficulties and problems. May they also keep on developing, and enjoy real peace, enjoy real happiness. Real peace, real happiness. If you may continue your sitting meditation, make best use of every moment. Make best use of this wonderful opportunity and take maximum benefit out of this. Keep practicing.